Welcome to the December 6th, 2017 episode of Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico and streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today we're going to talk about the legal but horrifying and disturbing use of sonic bombs by California fishermen. Nevada says good riddance to the practice of collecting wild reptiles for zoos and the pet trade. And finally, we will talk about the legal work of the Non-Human Rights Project on behalf of captive elephants. Jeannie, what's the first story?
Thank you very much, Danny. Alistair Bland reported in the September issue of Hakai magazine on the disturbing news that California fishermen are throwing explosives at sea lions and doing so legally. The sound carries for kilometers underwater and the passing blast waves feel like a punch to the chest. To dodge the painful noise, scuba divers in Monterey Bay avoid the water when the anchovy and squid fleets are out. Keith Rutzert, a recreational scuba diver, says that he and other divers, quote, just look off the beach, and if we see the boats, we go somewhere else, end quote. Rutzert is among a small but vocal group of conservationists and researchers raising concerns about commercial fishermen's use of what are called seal bombs. These explosives, which are comparable to small sticks of dynamite, scare off seals and sea lions that might otherwise raid fishing nets. They also annoy divers and potentially harm other species, particularly whales. Rutzert told Hakai magazine that, quote, he would think it's a violation of the Marine Mammal Protection Act. You're not supposed to approach seals and sea lions, and here you have guys throwing dynamite at them, end quote. But the practice is lawful. The Marine Mammal Protection Act, protection in quotes, right, specifically allows fishermen to use non-lethal measures to, quote, deter a marine mammal from damaging the gear or catch.
I mean, end quote. As far as I know, you can't use dynamite for actually catching fish and killing fish, right? Yet you can use like slightly smaller dynamite right next to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And also this is news to me. This is crazy. There's never some form of abuse that animal agriculture won't exploit if it benefits them, because
absolutely,
that's what capitalism is, especially with our increasingly diminished protection acts.
Yeah, actually, we haven't talked about this on the show at all. I've researched it in preparation for when we were getting ready, I think, to have Jonathan Balcom on air. Dynamite or explosives are used in the pet fish trade, in the tropical fish trade, to like stun animals, stun the fish so they're easier to capture. So again, yes, there's nothing unimaginable. You may think it's unimaginable, but if there's a profit to be made, it can be imagined. Philip Samet, a professional diver and boat captain, says he's heard seal bombs roughly a dozen times while underwater and says that, quote, they are loud, an explosive, painful sound. You can feel the pressure waves hit you in the chest. And it doesn't matter if it explodes next to your head or a mile away, underwater it sounds the same, end quote. On one occasion, diver Samet said that an explosive went off within 100 meters of him when the crew of a commercial squid boat intentionally shelled the water in what he says was a hostile effort to drive him and several other divers out of the water. Divers are unnerved by the seal bombs, but the area's whales may be experiencing physical injury. Simone Bauman-Pickering, a researcher with the Scripps Acoustic Ecology Laboratory, has spent the past several years working with graduate student Anna Krumpel to study the effects of noise on whales. Between 2005 and 2016, hydrophones fixed to the buoys along the coast of Southern California detected upward of 37,000 explosions per month during peak fishing season.
How many did they detect?
37,000 explosions per month, sometimes as many as 500 explosions an hour. So that's fishing fleets all along the coast.
Yeah.
It's not just one boat issuing a bunch of these bombs at one time, but it's the cumulative effect of a whole fleet doing this.
The other thing that, is terrible is you talk about, sustainable fishing or not sustainable fishing.
Wild caught.
Right. The amount of diesel and oil slicks and garbage and sewage and waste coming off of these boats, and the gunpowder and explosives and sulfur and saltpeter remains from these 37,000, you know, just polluting the ocean, you know, and like it's cumulative. It just adds up.
Yeah, I think that we can get maybe an idea of this. For instance, if you watch a fireworks display during the 4th of July and you see the volume of smoke in the air, the residue, well, that's all captured in water.
Right.
In these types of underwater explosions. The story goes on. In 1989, scientists with the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Southwest Fisheries Science Center conducted a rudimentary experiment detonating seal bombs near submerged dolphin carcasses. The scientists saw severe impacts on the carcasses, shattered bones and pulverized muscles from detonations within half a meter. Though the recent research from Scripps has not documented seal bombs physically harming wildlife, the explosive's potential effects should not be underestimated. Bauman Pickering says, the researchers estimate that whales and dolphins can hear seal bombs from as far away as 50 miles. It's reasonable to assume the noise is affecting them, she says. And to that I say, rather, it's unreasonable to expect that the noise doesn't affect them.
Right. I mean,
why would you take that position that it doesn't affect them?
Right. Let's set bombs off three houses away from all the fishermen every night and see if it bothers them, you know?
She, Bauman Pickering, and Krumpel have struggled to put a numerical assessment on these effects, which is essential to proving the explosives are harmful. Without concrete data to discourage their use, the seal bombs persist, along with anecdotal evidence from people on either side of the argument. One squid fisherman based in L.A. says that using the bombs is a vital part of his work. Besides, he says, he's seen no sign that whales or porpoises are bothered by the bombs, especially Riso's dolphins, which are frequently encountered near squid schools. The fisherman says, quote, those things show no response at all to seal controls, end quote.
Surprising. It's not like his livelihood depends upon saying this.
Several months ago, a fisherman and his crew were attempting to wrap a net around a school of yellowfin tuna near San Clemente Island off of Southern California. A humpback whale was swimming above the tuna, and no amount of explosives detonated in the water could get the whale to move. The fisherman says, quote, I threw a couple of bombs right next to it, and it had no effect at all, like it didn't even notice, end quote. No self-governing capabilities there, right?
Right, and as the earlier study noted, within half a meter or a meter, you know, it actually breaks bones. So we don't know what right next to it means here. We don't know what laws are about how close you are supposed to throw these bombs or how far, etc.
Bauman Pickering says such a response in a whale could mean a variety of things. The whale may be willing to put up with annoying noises if there's an abundance of prey, or, she suggests, the whale might already have been deaf. Sport divers and whale-watching skippers in Monterey, however, say that seal bombs have driven humpback whales away from prime foraging spots near the coast. Nancy Black, the owner of a local whale-watching tour company, says that in October 2015, dozens of humpback whales had gathered in Monterey Bay to feed on dense schools of anchovy. Each night, she says, fishing boats convened on the activity, working their nets and detonating explosives, and by dawn each new day, the whales had dispersed. Skipper Black says, quote, the only reason the whales would do that is if something scared them off, end quote. Samet, the diver that was interviewed earlier, says he's seen the same correlation. When commercial send net fishers begin fishing and bombing the water, the whales split, he says. He's quick to add that it isn't clear that seal bombs specifically cause the whales to leave. He says that it could also be that a 100-foot boat pulling up and throwing nets in the water, even without using seal bombs, would scare the whales off. We don't know, but the seal bombs don't help, end quote. That's just like the rational position you would take, right? Like, okay, yeah, the boats may be scaring them away, and the bombs just don't help. It's not like the bombs have zero effect. And if our listeners are wondering, a seine, S-E-I-N-E, is a fishing net that hangs in the water with its bottom edge weighted down by weights and its top edge buoyed by floats. So it's sort of a floating vertical curtain. The article goes on to say that there are limits to the use of seal bombs. For instance, it is illegal to use explosives to corral target species, but the practice does happen. In 2013, an Alaskan fisherman was fined for using explosives to drive salmon into his net. A commercial squid fisherman says in California it is routine for fishermen to use seal bombs to condense schools of small fish and squid into tight balls, which makes them easier to catch. When asked, officials with both the California and the U.S. federal governments, officials say they do not know how many fishermen are using explosive deterrents or even whether they're being used appropriately. Robert Anderson, a seal and sea lion expert with the U.S. National Marine Fisheries Service, was quoted as saying, quote, "It would be impossible to watch every fisherman using an explosive device. It falls on you as a fisherman to make sure you're in compliance with the law," end quote.
You know, and I would extend that to say that, you know, the entire industry is, you know, has some regulations that are routinely not followed and not monitored. Right. If you ever analyze the, you know, the statistics on the amount of bycatch, on the amount of salmon being sold that aren't salmon, or fish that aren't the fish you expect them to be, just all you know, the poaching in illegal waters, it's like if you can throw a sonic bomb and you find somebody breaking this law. And of course, it's not impossible to find. There are just many ways to do compliance.
Yeah, I mean, the industry wants to say that it's self-regulating.
Right.
But
what does
in
that
fact,
mean? Yeah.
You know, when there's a buck involved, the self-regulation.
You can't bring a boat into San Francisco Bay without a guide, without a pilot ship. It's not self-regulated. Pilot meets you. You cannot come in. They could easily have very similar programs where you have an observer.
Yeah, and that would raise the price of fish, but yeah,
and that would get passed on. But it would probably save money if you account for all the illegal things that are happening and the damage that does to the ecosystem that we have to try to fix with taxpayer money.
Yeah, or that then becomes unfixable.
You're
listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio, hosted by Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms. What's up next, Danny?
In September of this year, the Nevada Board of Wildlife Commissioners voted to permanently ban the commercial collection of reptiles. The ban is in response to advocacy by the Center for Biological Diversity, dozens of scientists, and hundreds of supporters. Until September, Nevada had allowed the unrestricted take of reptiles for private profit. What could go wrong? Which caused declines in populations of lizards and snakes, such as the chuckwalla and desert horned lizard. The new regulations instruct the Nevada Department of Wildlife to stop issuing commercial collection permits and to establish regulations for a permanent ban.
Right. So here again, like, we can self-regulate.
Right.
We can, you know, state of Nevada can...
It doesn't take...
We trust our reptile collectors.
It doesn't take too many people to catch a whole lot of lizards, you know, and boom, you've just devastated this local population. Patrick Donnelly, Nevada State Director with the Center for Biological Diversity, called the move a huge victory for wildlife and the people of Nevada. Nevada's remarkable snakes and lizards have been exploited for commercial profit for too long. This bold and forward-thinking action by the commission will ensure that precious reptiles are protected from such destructive exploitation. Commercial collectors have removed almost 500,000 reptiles, I assume that we know of, from Nevada's public lands over the past 30 years. This has resulted in localized population declines and prompted the Nevada Department of Wildlife to seek new regulations from the commission. Almost 50 scientists, including professors from the University of Nevada at Reno, Nevada State College, as well as Harvard University, submitted a letter to the commission expressing support for a complete ban. Citing climate change, disease, and other global threats to reptiles, the scientists encouraged the full ban to protect Nevada's unique reptile community. The move helps ensure that Nevada's lizards and snakes will be here for future generations. So, I mean, this is good news. You know, you think about the 500,000, probably 1 million, really, of these animals being removed from the ecosystem. You know, it's bad for those animals. It's bad for the ecosystem. You know, this is the Nevada high desert. Those animals are fulfilling very specific niches. They're probably eating very specific bugs and a whole chain of life, which is what, you know, ecosystems are.
Absolutely.
You start messing with that and it's not good.
So if folks are curious, in California, you don't need a license to photograph or watch lizards and snakes. But you are required by a law to have a license to, quote, take any reptile. And taking in California is defined as hunting, pursuing, catching, capturing, or killing these animals. And so there you have it. That capture part is often part of what's required or what's needed when a collector wants to even just take a picture of a lizard. So if you plan to take a picture of a lizard, it means you have to hold it, and that means you have to get a permit to do so. And if folks are interested in California lizards, I highly recommend the CaliforniaHerps.com website. They have pictures of all sorts of snakes and lizards and amphibians, and they have good, solid guidance on what to do and what not to do.
Cool.
So that we don't end up in California. So I guess the reason why I quoted that is because we do have some regulations in California on this. Mm-hmm. Definitely, you do have to have a license, and there's a long list on the California Herps website of the numbers that are allowed to be taken of different species, or zero in many cases. And we'll probably do a story on just like what critters you're allowed to take without restrictions.
Right.
Which there are some.
And while I wouldn't support buying and selling these animals instead of letting them live their lives, I imagine there's people out there that, you know, there are people that like snakes, there are people that like lizards, and they buy them. And if you're buying them, you know, on Craigslist or eBay or whatever, you know, take that opportunity to ask that person, are they licensed? What's your license number? You know, let's make sure you're getting it from someone at least doing it reputably.
Yeah. That's very good advice. All right. Let's carry on. You're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. Our last story is from the British newspaper The Independent, which reported on November 22nd on a new project from the New York-based Non-Human Rights Project, which filed a petition on November 13th in the Connecticut Superior Court demanding recognition of the legal personhood of three captive elephants, Minnie, Beulah, and Karen, under the common law writ of habeas corpus. The lawsuit also asserted that elephants have a fundamental right to bodily liberty, and as a remedy, demanded their release to the Performing Animal Welfare Society's ARC 2000 Sanctuary right here in Northern California in San Andreas. Some animals, such as elephants, whales, orcas, and chimpanzees, are extraordinarily cognitively complex. The Non-Human Rights Project is fighting for these beings to be recognized as persons, which will grant them the right to freedom from captivity. The Non-Human Rights Project is testing how far the rule of law extends. And the group argues that withholding the right to freedom from unlawful imprisonment from sentient non-human animals contradicts the very principle that the law should apply equally to all. The habeas corpus is a centuries-old means of testing the lawfulness of imprisonment before a court. It was used extensively in the 18th and 19th centuries to fight human slavery, where abolitionists often petitioned for common law writs of habeas corpus on behalf of enslaved individuals. The most well-known case was Somerset versus Stuart in 1772, in which the Lord Chief Justice of England and Wales granted the writ to a human slave, freeing him unequivocally and transforming him from a legal thing to a legal person, an autonomous person. The Non-Human Rights Project is arguing that it's time for common law courts to do the same for non-human animals. And this kind of change is already happening in some parts of the world. For example, in 2014, this was like amazing, a court in Argentina ruled that a captive orangutan named Sandra was entitled to the under habeas corpus to her release from captivity to a sanctuary. According to a Scientific American article, Sandra the orangutan now has the right to life, liberty, and freedom from harm.
Awesome.
The ruling was a historic because before her, a non-human primate like Sandra was considered an object, and therefore there was no dispute about her captivity. There'd be disputes about her welfare, but not the fact that she was in prison, that she was captive. The Association of Professional Lawyers for Animal Rights, which is an Argentinian animal law group, filed the habeas corpus petition on behalf of Sandra, asserting that she had been unjustifiably denied her freedom. The Argentine justice system then convened a committee of experts to find a sanctuary or another home for Sandra as long as she's healthy enough to travel to such sanctuary. In America, however, we have not reached that stage. And the elephants at the heart of the current case, Karen, Beulah, and Minnie, are seeking to test the writ of habeas corpus, the right of autonomous personhood, for elephants.
And if you think it strikes you as odd to call elephants people, remember that in this country, corporations are people.
Exactly.
Already. Should elephants have more rights than a corporation? I hope so.
Karen's an African elephant who was born in 1981 somewhere in Africa, and she was imported from Africa and then sold to a zoo called Comerford's Zoo in 1984. Beulah is an Asian elephant who was born in Myanmar which is also known as Burma, in 1967. And she was taken to the U.S. sometime after 1969. She also was sold to Comerford Zoo, which is a zoo in Connecticut. Under Comerford's ownership, she has been made to give rides to adults and children despite suffering from a painful foot disorder for several years.
I mean, this elephant has been a prisoner and a slave longer than many of our listeners have been alive.
Yep.
I mean, think about it. Longer than I've been alive. I mean, it's insane.
The third elephant, Minnie, was born in Thailand and imported to the U.S. in 1972 when she was only 2 months old. She was bought by a petting zoo and then sold in 1976 to the Comerford Zoo, where she is now rented out for extravagant Indian weddings, photo shoots, and films, as well as appearing at the county fair. PETA documented an incident in 2000 where Minnie was witnessed being struck in the face by an employee, provoking her to pin two of her handlers against a ramp. And she's also been found to have critically injured some handlers while children were riding her on three occasions. And the zoo still forces her to give rides. Despite his concern at these conditions, which sound horrible, being struck in the face, being forced to give rides, Stephen Wise of the Non-Human Rights Project says that the focus of his activism is the animals' rights rather than their welfare. To understand what he means by this, he makes an analogy. Say, for instance, Bill Gates kidnaps my wife, and I seek a writ of habeas corpus against Bill Gates, right? That's a demand for Bill Gates to prove why he's keeping his wife captive. We're not going to have a discussion in the courtroom about whether Bill Gates can give my wife a better life than I can. The issue is going to be, is she there against her will or not? Is she a prisoner? Wise says that even if elephants have adequate food and veterinary care, even if they're being held captive legally, this doesn't change the fact that they've been stripped of their autonomy. He emphasizes that this is what happens when people are in prison. Human beings are stripped of their autonomy, their independence. Wise goes on to say that an elephant in a traveling circus is a prisoner, period.
The Non-Human Rights Project cites detailed statement from elephant experts stating that elephants are autonomous beings who value their freedom. Karen McComb, a professor of animal cognition and communication at the University of Sussex, says elephants share many capacities with humans that are characteristic of autonomy and self-determination. These include self-awareness, empathy, and awareness of death. Wise says some courts recognize that some non-humans are extraordinarily cognitively complex, but decide we are still going to treat those non-humans as if they were automatons or slaves. Wise says that this situation is irrational and points to the cases of Native Americans such as Standing Bear or enslaved Africans like Dred Scott who were not recognized by the courts as legal persons. Those men's lawyers did not overlook the fact that their clients weren't white. That just wasn't relevant to their status as legal persons. He adds, at the Non-Human Rights Project, we're saying of the legal system, look, we're in the process of screwing up again. Let's do the right thing now and not wait 100 years.
Thanks, Danny. Next week, we'll be having philosophy professor Robert Jones on the show to talk about the Non-Human Rights Project and the work he is doing filing a friend of the court amicus brief on the case of Tommy and Kiko, two chimpanzees being represented by the Non-Human Rights Project. And our folks may remember that Robert Jones was the co-founder and original co-host on Non-Human Radio.
Yay.
Back when we were a baby show. So look forward for more thinking and processing. I know it can be difficult to think of the idea of the writ of habeas corpus being applied to animals in zoos. And we're going to expose that a little more and give it a little more thought.
Awesome. Robert's certainly smarter than I, so look forward to what he has to say next week.
So anyway, this is Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM. Listener-supported community radio.
And now it's time for the Chico Animal Rights Calendar of Events. Get out your calendars, get out your Androids and iPhones and pen and paper, write on the back of your hand, put it on a piece of paper and lose it like I do.
Well, this month is easy. There's only one event that I want to point out that's scheduled so far, and that is on Sunday, December 17th. In Defense of Animals is hosting a memorial ceremony and blessing for wildfire animal victims.
Mm.
That'll be on Sunday, December 17th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Silverado Resort and Spa in Napa, California. There's going to be a memorial ceremony and blessing for animal victims who perished in the deadly fires that ravaged several Bay Area counties, including Napa and Sonoma. And there'll be firefighters, dignitaries, first responders, and animal rescue organizations who will share heartfelt stories about domestic and wild animal victims of the fires. Please RSVP to Brenda Burke at brenda@jamesonrescueranch.org if you're interested in finding out more information on that. And that is it for the calendar. If you have an event to share, please send me an email at chicovegan@gmail.com. And we have one last bit of business to take care of, and that's the animal rights quote of the week. Take it away, Danny.
The animal rights quote of the week is from Charles M. Blow, journalist, commentator, and current visual op-ed columnist for the New York Times. Quote, "One doesn't have to operate with great malice to do great harm. The absence of empathy and understanding are sufficient. In fact, a man conceived of his virtue, even in the midst of his vice, is the worst." Oh, convinced. Let me do this again. "One doesn't have to operate with great malice to do great harm. The absence of empathy and understanding are sufficient. In fact, a man convinced of his virtue, even in the midst of his vice, is the worst kind of man." And maybe we know somebody like that in the White House. Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Thanks to Guillermo Bill Mash and Sue Hildebrand for their engineering assistance and moral support. Stay tuned for Sue's show, The Real Issue, coming up next. I see her here in the house.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM. Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, or its staff.
We do, however, reflect the opinions of our non-human fellow earthlings who would rather not be killed and eaten, hunted, raced, experimented upon, sold, traded, and otherwise abused.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against.
This is Danny Toms and Jeannie Trezino signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan. Vegan. And this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.